Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. Whether you're tuning in through Conversations Radio Network, we welcome you. Those joining us on the radio dial in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM, we're glad you all could tune in with us today, as well as those joining us in Atlanta at 106 Live. We're glad to have all of you with us as well. Joe Somanese is our guest for this segment. He's written a fascinating book that I think you all will really enjoy and that you'll find a use for in every aspect of your life, where we're talking about professionally or personally. It's called The Gift of Anger: Use Passion to Build, Not Destroy. And what I love about this book is not only does Joe not only focus on some of the work he was able to do as the president of the Human Rights Campaign, but also how in life in general, how all of us can be able to achieve so much more by coming together. That seems really simple, something that we all should believe. We're going to talk to Joe about how that has worked for him and also what he hopes you're able to take away from the book. Joe, hello to you and welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, look, I'm glad to have you on with us, because one of the big things that I took away from this book when I started sharing it with other people after I read it is the importance of something that you discuss in the book, and that is finding common ground. It seems so simple, but in the world that we live in today that seems to be so polarized, and we can see it in all aspects of life, especially in this political season, it seems as though coming together is almost a dirty thing for people. What has it been like for you, Joe, to show what you've been able to accomplish by doing so, but also what we all can do to be able to come together and work better together?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've had the real privilege over the last 20 years of essentially working in social change, whether it's trying to change the makeup of Congress to be more representative of the country, in particular helping to elect more women to Congress, or, you know, in better part of the last decade working towards fuller LGBT equality, whether it's passing the Matthew Shepard hate crimes bill or repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And, you know, the sort of tactical thing that I learned in being in situations where I was in the company of people who didn't agree with me or who weren't on the same page that I was on in terms of what it was that we were hoping to achieve was that I really was forced to figure out a way to find common ground with other people. And you're right. I think in the times that we live in, we sort of define ourselves or define our relationships with the people around us oftentimes in a way that's based on the things that make us different rather than the things that make us the same. And it's a, you know, it's a kind of an obvious and sort of a simple idea that we ought to change that dynamic, but it's easier said than done, and I think it takes a real intention in the times that we live in. So for me, you know, I was forced to find a way to get people to come around to my way of thinking, and I think the, you know, the sort of the thematic that ran through all that was that first and foremost I had to find a way to get on common ground with other people.
Right. Exactly. I think that is so true. You addressed something in the book that I was not expecting, Joe, but makes perfect sense in the conversation that we're having today and also in what you discuss in the book, and that is the importance of being mindful and being present. I think, you know, for myself, as I have been able to realize the importance of that and how it has definitely helped me in all aspects of my life, when did you first realize the importance of that? Because I think what I want our audience to really appreciate is that there's nothing wrong with being passionate about what you believe. There's nothing wrong with believing what you believe. But I think the problem comes in, Joe, when you address this really wonderfully in the book, is thinking that your way is the only way and it has to be your way or no way. So when did you realize that that didn't have to be the case and how you could still get things done, Joe?
You know, I think for me, one of the things that I learned over years of just sitting across from people and having conversations with people about difficult issues, trying to, as I said, get them to at least be open to the possibility of my point of view, was that in conversation, to be effective and to you know, strategically, you know, maybe get what you want or come out of it in a more positive way, you've got to be a much better listener than speaker. You know, you've got to hear what people are saying and take in what people are saying and be very present in that conversation, in that moment, in a way that allows you to have a deeper understanding of what is at the heart of somebody else's resistance. So I talk a lot in the book, as you said, about being very present, you know, and being very intentional in interactions with people. And, you know, if somebody, I mean, on the issue of gay rights, for instance, or LGBT issues generally, you know, oftentimes people would be putting forward their resistance, why a congressman didn't agree with me on repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or why someone didn't support marriage equality. And I could talk an awful lot, you know, almost be on autopilot and not have to really be so present in the conversation, just kind of spew out everything I believed. Or I could spend that time really pulling information out of that person, listening and being very intentional about what I was hearing and understand what was at the heart of that person's resistance. Sometimes people who didn't support my agenda didn't support it because they just were resistant to change. It wasn't so much about an LGBT issue as it was about an issue of change generally. And other times it's because they were afraid. And if someone's resistance to you is based in fear versus based in misunderstanding, those are, you know, they may have the same outward disagreement with you, but what's at the heart of that disagreement are two very different things. And so what you then go back at them with, what you sort of pull out of your arsenal by way of an argument, are very different things. If you've done the work and been present and intentional and listened and figured out what's at the heart of someone's disagreement with you.
Right. I think that is so true. And even as you share in the book, Joe, that a lot of times, even though you might actually believe the way that they're thinking is flawed, you know, still to be able to hear them out, because then it allows you to be better equipped in moving forward. And I think that, again, is the main thing. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, we're speaking today with Joe Somanese. He's the author of the book, The Gift of Anger, Use Passion to Build, Not Destroy. Many know Joe because he's the former president of the Human Rights Campaign. He draws a lot on what he was able to accomplish and work through throughout this book. But also, I believe, and I said it early in the conversation, this book can really help us in all aspects of our life. Did you realize that going into the book, Joe, that was the case, or is that something you realized as you were relating some of the examples that you did, that this is something that we can all use in one way or another?
You know, I think for me, I, again, in working in social change, I just had the opportunity to find myself in a lot of really interesting situations, you know, with people like Judy Shepard on the Hill lobbying for hate crimes, or working right alongside the President of the United States trying to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And a lot of times, either just in conversational ways or in speaking to college students, which I did a lot of, I would kind of tell these stories, talk about a lesson I learned from having been in these situations, and then relay that lesson to people in a way that they could apply to their everyday lives, whether it was in strengthening their relationships or, you know, having better work relationships, or, you know, maybe people who are interested in professional development or leadership development. I just felt that there were some lessons that I could convey to people that they could learn. What I learned in writing the book, I think, was this idea that a lot of the stories I had to tell and a lot of the situations I came up against, you know, in encountering people who didn't agree with me, you know, they elicited a level of anger in me, and they were things that would, you know, that create anger in a lot of people. And I began to sort of think about this issue of anger, and I realized that to get from, you know, the situation you're in and the thing that is a conflict to the tactical thing that you have to do in order to move forward from that involves moving beyond that anger or channeling that anger in a way that is directed towards a positive outcome. That part of it, the what you do with your emotion and what you do with your anger and how you put it in a space or channel it in a way to be productive, is the thing that I really kind of learned in the process of writing the book.
Right, and I think that, again, is the powerful thing for sure. One of the most powerful chapters for me, I believe, Joe, is the chapter, How to Ask for Anything and Get It. And before our audience you know, thinks, okay, this is going to be the chapter that they can use to definitely get everything they want, one of the things that you show is the work that's involved of the person asking, Joe, and mm-hmm. having the right intent. I think that is a big part of this as well. Have you found that when you're reflecting back on what you've accomplished, let's just say through, you know, through HRC, have you found that that is really it, that you realize that in asking, it really is, as you talk about in this chapter, realizing that it is something that both parties can be able to benefit from, and realizing what that is as you're going in for the ask?
Sure, and you know, it's interesting you set it up that way, because that's again, that's one of those conclusions I probably came to after I had kind of worked through the writing of the chapter, which is that I spent an awful lot of time asking for things on behalf of the people I represented, you know, particularly in the halls of Congress. And any time that I asked a member of Congress to support us, you know, or any time I asked somebody for money to support the work that we were doing, I found that I was much more successful when I could characterize it in a way that benefited us, and by us, you know, the people I represented, but also benefited the person who was doing the giving. And so, you know, asking for money, you know, for an issue that you care about, and sort of posing that ask in a way that, you know, you're almost asking somebody to, you know, lend you $100 till you make it to your next paycheck, is not an effective way of asking for money. But asking for money for something that you care about, with an understanding that the person who's going to give the money also cares about it, and with enough knowledge of, you know, sort of why it is that that person cares about the issue and how it is that you can frame that ask in a way that they benefit from giving the money in as much as you benefit from getting the money, is a, you know, a way to make that ask much more successful. And in the book, as you mentioned, you know, I sort of relate that to people asking for things at work, you know, asking for a raise. And again, you know, anybody who goes into their manager or their boss and asks for a raise needs to be prepared to ask for that raise and to characterize that ask in a way that, yes, benefits you because of what you've, the value proposition you are to the company, but also in a way that demonstrates to your boss, your supervisor, or your manager that you getting a greater degree of recognition and a higher degree of recognition in the work that you're delivering has the benefit of benefiting the workplace and therefore benefiting your manager or your boss as well.
Exactly.
And I think people sometimes overlook that.
I'm sorry. I was just going to actually read something that you wrote in the book, Joe, that I think is great. For those who have the print edition, it's on pages 112 and 113. You wrote this: your big dream can be your guiding light, but you may have to be happy with what you can get along the way. And we see this play out in the political process a lot, of course, in business transactions too, that you may have a larger goal, but maybe you don't get everything that you want, but you're able to get something that starts the ball rolling. And I think that is the thing. You even go on to say this on page 113 of the book, Joe: smaller obtainable goals may seem like you're asking for less than you deserve or want, but you are laying down a foundation to eventually get exactly what you want. Now, that again is something that when we stop and think about it, it makes perfect sense. But it would seem like at the time, you know, it seems as though it's an all or nothing thing. You know, do you feel as though just your experience and trial and error help you to appreciate what you wrote here? That, you know, that if you don't get everything all at once, it doesn't mean you failed, that you succeeded even in starting the process.
Well, I think, you know, legislatively, one of the things I learned was, I mean, look, for the LGBT community, right, when you talk about your dream or the sort of the North Star or the ultimate achievement, I think for us it was the attainment of marriage equality all across the country. And there were an awful lot of people in the community who weren't going to be satisfied until we had everything. But there were an awful lot of lesser achievements or steps along the way that were about, you know, tax benefits for same-sex couples or, you know, sort of a greater set of directives from the president to how LGBT people should be treated in government jobs. So a lot of things that were considerably less than marriage, but certainly had an impact on somebody, if not everybody. But the thing that I learned is that the smaller victories, which, you know, substantively impacted somebody, also had the effect of being the sort of the stepping stones that we were able to use to get to the bigger victories. So a member of Congress who, you know, maybe couldn't ever imagine themselves voting, you know, sort of supporting something big like marriage equality or the repeal of DOMA, but could kind of, you know, get their heads around voting for the hate crimes bill or voting to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Sometimes it was the exercise or the act of doing something smaller that empowered them to do something bigger. You know, gee, I voted on something that I didn't think was as politically controversial, and when I went back to my district, there was no fallout. There was no controversy. There was nobody saying that I had done the wrong thing. Wow, that surprised me. That was a pleasant surprise. Maybe I can do the next thing, you know, the next bigger thing. So there's something to be said about, you know, laying a foundation of, you know, kind of smaller things in order to get the bigger things. And I think where you, you know, sort of take that into the workplace, one of the things I always counsel, particularly younger people and people who are newer in the workforce, is that, you know, if you want something, you have to be very intentional about what you want. If you want a very big job, or you want a better office, or you want a better title, and you ask for it, you know, you might get it. But if what you're really interested in is a greater degree of respect, or more recognition of the work that you're doing, or the, you know, sort of the role that you're playing, then think about, you know, what it is that, that is going to satisfy you in that. And, you know, a lot of people will say, gee, you know, I think I should have a private office or a better office, and they ask for a better office. Well, as a manager, you know, if I've got a better office to give away, I'll give it to you, because that's not a lot of sort of, you know, capital on my part. But, you know, I hear a lot of young people say, well, you know, I feel like I should be a part of meetings that I'm not a part of, and they'll ask to be a part of things that they're not a part of. And I'll say, you know, the way to be a part of a conversation or a part of a meeting that you shouldn't be part of is to demonstrate that you've got something to contribute to that meeting. And when you've got something to contribute to that meeting, I guarantee you nobody's going to start that meeting without making sure that you're there.
Right.
So,
for sure.
You know, that goes from an ask of, I'd like to be in these meetings that I'm not a part of, to, I'd like to be contributing more to this organization or more to this company. I think I'm doing a good job, but I think there's more that I can give. Well, you know, those are two very different ways of saying you want a greater level of recognition than you're getting. But the second way does so in a way that shows, you know, sort of demonstrate you've got something to offer, where everybody gains from that statement.
Right. You make it clear in the book, Joe, as you're talking about your work with HRC, that you were the boss. You had people around you who you listened to, and that definitely made things better. Listening is something, again, that especially if you watch cable news channel any particular time, does not seem to be what most people are doing. They're basically just trying to get their point across. They're not really caring if they're talking over anyone, or even if, you know, what they're saying even answers a question that they've been asked. Sometimes you wonder if they even heard the question. Do you feel as though listening has really been one of the big keys for you in being able to achieve what you have done with HRC and just in life, being willing to actually listen to what people are saying and being able to act from there moving forward?
Absolutely. I think that, and it's interesting you bring up cable news, because I think we live in a time and we live in a world where people are just bombarded by information. I mean, you know, you're watching television. It's a split screen with a, you know, like with some text running across the bottom, and you've got your smartphone and your computer set up. I mean, you're taking in so much information now, and so everything is, you know, we live in a world of Twitter, right? Everything is boiled down to 140 characters, and so
right.
the give and take of conversation and the speaking and listening is not what it used to be, and so instead of listening and watching a thoughtful conversation and a give and take, we listen to, you know, or we sort of experience people shouting and talking over one another and simply trying to get their talking points or their sound bite out. But, you know, if you play the long game, as I call it, you know, if you go into situations, whether it's a social setting or a dinner party or a work meeting, and you listen really carefully and you sort of get a gauge of the room and gain an understanding of where everybody is and what everybody's saying, and when you speak, you say something that is as a result of what you're hearing and is an impactful and effective and oftentimes like an original thing, that's the thing that people ultimately end up listening to. And, you know, I say there are an awful lot of people who just, you know, they come in hot and they come in talking and they want to sort of take up all the space. And in the short run, they're the people that others pay attention to. But in the long run, you know, it's the person who listens and is solicitous and says things that are original and different and thoughtful and based on a sense that, you know, you listen to what I said. That are going to be, you know, the people that, you know, you're going to want to be friends with or are going to want to be friends with you, or people are going to want to have you in those conversations, in those meetings.
For sure. And I think that boils down to the last point I wanted to talk about with you, Joe, and that is that really at its end, when I finish reading this book, The Gift of Anger, people just want to know that they matter, that what they feel matter, matters to the other person, that it's not being just, you know, glossed over, that their concerns are seen, you know, for what they are. And that then I think once that recognition comes, I believe, and I think the book shows it, and I'm curious as to what you would say, you know, I think it really helps them to know, okay, well, you understand what I'm saying, so let's see where we can go from here. Is that one of the big things for you, too, as a takeaway?
Absolutely, and, you know, it's true what you said. I mean, I think people want to be heard, and we live in a time when a lot of what you're talking about with, you know, sort of cable news and the way we convey information is because nobody feels like they're being heard. So to give someone the sense that they're being heard, to speak in a way that you convey to someone that you respect who they are, you respect what they have to say, you've taken the time and the effort to, you know, kind of really understand what's at the heart of who they are and what they feel, is an incredibly impactful thing to do. And it's something, it's even made even more impactful because so few people do it anymore. So, you know, I write a bit in the book about working with religious leaders, you know, whether it's the heads of the LDS Church or, you know, evangelical Christians who were in a very different place in terms of the issues I was advocating for. But even in those situations where we seemed so far apart, I made the effort to really listen to who they were, ask them questions, understand what was at the heart of what they were feeling and what they were expressing. And, you know, I write about, you know, a guy named Jim Garlow, who was the head of a very conservative evangelical church in California. You know, we walked away from the, in fact, he was the chairman of the Proposition A campaign. You know, we walked away from those conversations, I think, not necessarily agreeing with one another, but having a greater sense of who one another were, and
right.
You know, who we were as people and the circumstances of our lives and what was at the heart of that disagreement. And, you know, I like to think in some instances, you know, each of us was gained a greater level of understanding of the other because we made the effort to listen.
Exactly. And that's what it's all about. It doesn't mean that you're going to agree on everything, but to be able to realize that more can be accomplished together, I think that is the big thing, Joe, for sure. Again, everyone, Joe Solmanese has been our guest for this segment. Great conversation with you, Joe. The book is The Gift of Anger. Use passion to build, not destroy. Again, nothing wrong with being passionate, but knowing how to direct it, how to be able to use it, and then, of course, to realize how you can be able then to be able to win over others and get the support that you want and get the things done that you want by being willing to build those bridges. Joe has definitely been able to do that in his professional life, and you can do it both professionally and personally as well, and the book definitely outlines that. The book is available through our friends at Amazon.com. I've already posted my review there. You can be able to get the book there or through your favorite bookstore as well. If they don't have it, they'll be glad to order it for you. And Joe, how can our audience stay connected with you?
They can stay connected with me at my site, joesolmanese.com. They can email me there, and I look forward to hearing from people.
Well, Joe, again, congratulations on the book. Thank you so much for the time, and looking forward to staying connected with you.
Thank you, Cyrus. It was great. I appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate the time. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Joe, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link to the podcast is already available. I've already posted it on Facebook and Twitter, and actually I've tagged Joe on both places. So you can head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb, or you can go to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. You can click on the link there, listen to the show completely for free, and share it with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.